Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, another drug code infraction for Willy Rioli. What does this mean for his career? The Waffle Grand Final, the disaster. What does the West Australian Football Commission do? Nat Fyfe, congratulations, his second Brownlow medal. We pull the medal apart. And we look towards the weekend and Saturday's AFL Grand Final between Richmond and GWS.
That was out of bounds!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Hello, everybody. Tuesday. It's the day after the Brownlow medal. It is the Tuesday before the AFL Grand Final. It is the Tuesday after the Waffle Grand Final, for whatever that was worth. And I am with Glenn Quatermain. This is the Duff and Quarters podcast. I am Mark Duffield, the senior footy writer of the West Australian. Of course, Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Quarters, the big news of the day is Willy Rioli. Willy Rioli has allegedly tested positive to a banned substance, being cannabis, on September 5 at a match day test after the game against Essendon. This means he faces two doping infractions, and this means he probably faces a four-year ban. Your thoughts?
I would think it would take an extraordinary... If he's found guilty, it will take an extraordinary turn of events or defence to not be suspended for 4 years. The previous infraction of substituting a urine sample... That could have been argued down. It wasn't necessarily going to happen, but there was a good case to argue it down. Now that he's tested positive for cannabis on match day. Now, it's interesting, depending on who you talk to, what's the worst offence? They're both pretty bad. They both attract up to a maximum 4 years penalty. The advice I've had is from talking to people who know is that it's served concurrently. So you're not going to have a four-year ban for one or a two-year ban for one and a two for other. It'll be served concurrently. But it's ASADA will be laying down the ban, and it'll be... they cannot see it being less than 4 years. That's my argument. So that's a... If he's found guilty and that happens, and given that there is a double whammy infraction here, I would find it... very risky for the AFL to challenge that. I would find it very time-consuming for Rioli's legal counsel to challenge that. I think it's a really sad state of affairs. And if we have seen the last of Willy Rioli, and if he does get a four-year ban, I suspect we have. What a shame for Willy. What a shame for the game.
Yeah, it is. But to put that in context, I think this is the AFL. This is the pointy end of elite sport in Australia. And the AFL challenges and finds people out for all different types of reasons. Now, this would be a sad reason for Willy Rioli not to be able to go on. But that said, you know, some players don't make it because they're not durable enough. Some players don't make it because they're not skillful enough. Some because they're not quick enough. Some because they're not tough enough. It might be that Willie's failure to understand the landscape and the gravity of things like keeping your body clear of a substance like cannabis on match day, like understanding the respect with which you need to treat a urine test, which is done under the WADA code, that those things might be the things that bring an end to Willy Rioli's, rapidly developing AFL career.
I would suggest a lack of going in with an argument, a lack of knowledge about drug testing would not amount to much, given the amount of counselling they have, both from the junior level right through their careers at AFL level now. So I just don't think that's going to wash at all.
And Quarters, I think the other thing that won't wash now is this line that was put out that the only reason Willy Rioli substituted urine in the sample on August 20 was that he was dehydrated and unable to produce a sample. Now, whatever Willy's motivations on that day were, the reality is that ASADA and WADA are entitled to take the view, given the subsequent positive test, that Willy may have been, there's a strong chance that Willie may have been concerned about something that was going to turn up in his sample and did not clearly understand what the ramifications of that were going to be, given that the ramifications for a Tuesday test where something like cannabis was found in his systems would be absolutely zero.
So you would not find cannabis in your system if ASADA was testing you on a non-match day. Is that correct?
Well, they wouldn't, because they wouldn't test for it.
That's right. So if he just produced a urine sample, perhaps, and there is an argument that he was target tested on September 5, which is the Essendon final,
because
of the urine
irregularity. Yep.
So the full urine sample on that day, perhaps no target testing Essendon, perhaps now we're not sitting here talking about this.
And
the fact is, though, if he is guilty, he has transgressed, and let's not forget the AFL is a signatory to ASADA and WADA.
Yep.
So you can't have it both ways, Duff.
And let's not have the nonsense about, the AFL needs to walk away from WADA and ASADA because a small handful of people have been not capable of keeping themselves clear and in line with the WADA code.
Yep.
It's a pretty simple thing to do. There are certain substances which are banned. There are certain substances which are not. And there is a certain way to do a urine sample. Doing a urine sample is not reciting Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. It's peeing in a cup.
It is, yeah, there is.
And so,
and there's a lot of information given at that test by the drug tester as to what this test is for, who we are. So it's the confusion should not have existed either, Duff. So, I mean, these are things that will be thrown around for the next 6 to 8 months probably. It's a shame. But it is what it is. You're either a signatory to it or you're not. And the AFL is. And he's an elite player.
And the ramifications of walking away from the WADA code are extreme. The AFL government would feel no compunction to put funding into AFL football and Australian rules football if Australian rules football was not a signatory to the WADA and ASADA codes. I mean, why would you?
Exactly.
Every young player that was going into the AFL would then be at risk of a watered down and diluted drugs code, which would put them at risk of taking substances which are potentially harmful to their health.
So there will be people out there asking, well, why was Sam Murray, did he only serve 18 months? He tested positive to cocaine on match day. He argued that there were two points to this. He argued that it was ingested earlier and it was still in his system on the day.
He was also arguing inadvertent ingesting, everyone is entitled to roll their eyes and go
exactly,
yeah, flat, but the, flat but, earth and Santa also, Claus and all
but he's
that,
also but, not transgressed twice, Duff. He has not produced a false urine sample, so there is a clear difference.
Quarters, your understanding of this is that there'll be one penalty meted out,
yes,
for the two offences, but the penalty will be geared to the offence that ASADA and WADA view as the most grievous.
Which is still
and
the urine sample.
And that will be the urine substitution?
I think so. Yes. I believe so. I think when they lay down that decision, though, given that it will be for the more serious breach, it will still be, the information will still be there in the back of their minds that there's been a dual breach.
Yep.
So therefore, they're not going to err on the side of, they're not going to water it down for him at all.
And just to be clear on this, the process that we followed here is that the first body to hear this when ASADA and WADA have finalised their cases is likely to be the AFL Tribunal, and that will be at some point next year. But as we've talked about earlier, the thing that the AFL and West Coast have to bear in mind where they try and weigh up what sort of penalty they go for and how much they try and water that penalty down is that if ASADA and WADA do not like the penalty, they have the power to go back to not accept the penalty, basically, to go back to a body like the Court of Arbitration for Sport and say, no, we're not accepting that. We want a greater penalty. That is exactly what happened with Essendon.
And the AFL do not want that to happen, Duff, under any circumstances.
Well, that's when he gets the big kahuna.
Yep.
Basically, the Court of Arbitration for Sport would be likely to rule a 4-year ban. Now, I don't know whether the AFL and West Coast can see any way.
They'll try and find a way, no question. But it comes down to common sense and the impact it has on the competition. And that's the big picture here, Duff. It's the impact it has on the competition. Everyone's going to get their arms around Willie, and they should get their arms around him. But the bigger picture is the AFL and where it stands.
So Willie Rioli, as we understand it, is in Darwin. He's reportedly going to head to the Tiwi Islands, his home, in the coming days. There were pictures on social media of him swimming with Chance Bateman.
Who's the Eagles' Indigenous Welfare Officer.
He's a member of the Eagles' staff and hierarchy, so that's good. They've got support around Willie.
He's a really good bloke, Changa, too. He'll do a good job of helping him out.
So that's the human side of this, but the AFL side of this and the elite sports side of this is that Willie has not met the standards that are required to be an AFL player. And that's going to result in dire consequences for him, and it's going to result in dire consequences for his career.
I almost feel apologetic to Nat Fyfe here. I know it's the news of the day, so we've got to talk about it first. But significant achievement last night. Second Brownlow medal to Nat Fyfe, and possibly could have won three if not for a suspension in 2014. But I think it's clear now, well, it's been clear for some time that Nat poles. And I think I'd be very surprised if he doesn't end up a triple Brownlow medalist at some stage. It was interesting watching the count last night, Duff, too, because there are certain players there who you clearly pole. Patrick Cripps is one of them. So all going well with him, injury and what have you, and Carlton on the up, he's going to win one. And Coniglio as well, who's been in the frame for a while now, missed a lot of footy this year and still polled really well. So, but Nat Fyfe, gee, didn't he speak well?
Yeah, he's always spoken well. I mean, Nathan is smarter than your average AFL player. Mm. I mean, let's just say that from the outset. He understands there is a lot of, one, he speaks well from the heart, I think, but he also understands the boxes that have to be ticked in terms of when you get up and make a speech like that. And, you know, of course, he starts off with all the corporate supporters, and then he gets to his teammates and his club and the AFL community in general, made sure all the boxes were ticked, and then is able to engage with Hamish McLaughlin, who I thought did a really good job with a really well-researched interview.
You did.
With Nathan,
yeah, did a good
on stage.
Job full stop, really.
And, you know, they were able to give people in their living rooms and in the room a great insight into the sort of person that Nathan is and where he has come from, and a bit about his family life and a bit about his football roots. The two trees in the backyard.
Brilliant.
That he's
one of them he's killed.
Flattened one by imitating Matthew Richardson's kicking at goal. Yeah, all that stuff was fascinating and humorous.
I love I thought it was really eye-opening, and don't hear players giving you an insight like he did last night in terms of thanking Conker, in terms of the players who've looked after him when he's, you know, the criticism of Fyfe has been that he runs one way, he doesn't defend too well. But you know what? Most of the superstars are like that, Duff. Mm. And so you need backup. And so, I mean, Chris Judd had his backup in his day, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he used to thank Rowan Jones.
Rowan Jones, exactly. So I thought that was a really interesting insight. And it was a really, really, really good speech. One of the better ones I've heard, I reckon.
So Quarters, as you say, he could have won in 2014, but for a couple of suspensions. He wins in 2015. Broken leg 2016. He makes his way back in 17 and 18. Wins in 2019. Is Nathan Fyfe now the dominant player of his era?
Gee, that's a really good question. I don't think he was the best player this year, but he's damn deserved Brownlow medalist, let me put it that way. Certainly deserved the Brownlow medal. So, yeah, probably is on the way to that. But I think Patrick Cripps is going to pass most blokes pretty quickly if he hasn't already. I mean, there's Bontempelli, who's as good as anyone. Bontempelli, in my opinion, is every bit as good as Fyfe.
Mm.
So it's a really difficult question. The weight of numbers over his career so far, you'd have to say yes, given he's won two.
Yeah, I think probably if you go back to 2012, 2013. I don't think there's another player who's put his stamp on the competition in the manner that Fyfe has. And I guess it makes it a little bit more important, Quarters, that he franks it and that Fremantle is able to help him frank it.
By winning a premiership.
With a premiership.
Wouldn't
before
that be a, I mean, he spoke about that last night, of course. There's nothing really he can achieve more individually. He can achieve more Brownlows. He can achieve more Doig medals. He can do all of that. But, yeah, it is a career that truly needs to be franked with a flag. And I hope for your sake he does it.
Yeah, me too. I'm sitting there with my fingers crossed, my toes crossed, and
I've got a few other Fremantle mates too.
Everything
I'd
else
like to
that
see
I've
them
got
enjoy it.
Crossable is crossed. What a great poll for Western Australia.
Three of the top five.
Paddy Cripps looked like the winner at the halfway point.
Yeah.
Tim Kelly looked like he could come through. Of course, we had Nathan Fyfe. And, of course, we had Lachie Neal, who has strong links to WA and Fremantle in the mix
but
as
an
well.
An Adelaide boy. 33-5, 27 Dangerfield, 26 Cripps, 26 Neal, and 24 Kelly. You just sort of... It was interesting. When Cripps was piling well in all the losing games, I was thinking, you can't be beaten. But then I just sort of... Late, I just thought, nah, it's... He'll get his opportunity, though, Duff, in the next couple of years.
You know what happened with Cripps, I think, is that a couple of other Carlton players emerged that had really strong back halves.
Probably post-Bolton, when they had the changeover.
Ed Curno was one. Ed Curno had a really strong back half of the year and actually grabbed a couple of top votes. The most remarkable thing about Nathan's performance, I reckon, is that, yes, he polled 20 votes in the first 12 games when Fremantle were winning and they were 7-5, and that sent him to the top of the leaderboard. He polled 13 votes in Fremantle's last 10 games when they won two games. Mm. Twice he played in a losing team and got the top votes. And when you look at those two games, Quarters, I don't think you can argue against him getting the top votes.
No, the Hawthorn one, certainly.
When he had the mid-match purple patch and kicked the three goals and dragged them back into the game.
Absolutely. Well, he dragged them back into the game. He did.
And the St Kilda game at Marvel Stadium when they nearly won, which was going to keep them in finals contention. He had 35, kicked two goals, 11 inside 50s with seven clearances and about 16 contested possessions in that game. There's your best on ground game.
I think Cripps is remarkable for the same reason. When he polled so many games early when they were not just losing, but they're getting their pants pulled down.
Yeah.
Would have been easy just to sort of... just walk away from that. But he stood up in every one of those games. And so I was really pleased to see him go so close. I'd love to see him win one. And I think he will.
Did you have a surprise polar or a surprise non-polar?
No. Grundy was an interesting one. Would have liked to have seen Grundy win it. I think he would have been as deserved as any winner. Would have been as deserved as Fyfe. Surprise polar. I'll tell you what did surprise me. I know he didn't have a great year, but Angus Brayshaw's... gone from cheese to chalk, hasn't he? He's surprised, second last year?
Yep. Third.
Did he poll at all this year? Didn't poll.
I can't remember. I don't
think he polled.
Right. Yeah.
So there you go. There's your interesting turnaround, but let's hope, and I'm sure we'll see him back up the top pointy end again very soon. Let's hope so. Not really. I thought Warple would poll more for Hawthorn, just looking at it from Hawthorn's point of view.
Did he lead Hawthorn's count?
Yes, he did. I thought it was really the most interesting thing for me was Bontempelli and as we suspected could happen, McRae and Dunkley taking votes from him.
Yeah.
That happened.
Yep.
That you could see it happening.
They kind of split it between the
they
three
did.
Of them.
Well,
didn't
in
they?
Fact, I think Bontempelli and McRae were evens on 22, I think.
Yeah, I think Dunkley was about 19 or 20.
Look at those three. How many did they poll? 60 votes.
Similar thing with slightly lower numbers at West Coast too. You had Yo, Gaff, Shuey, all polling around about the same amount.
And I think it's hard to see Yo having better years than he's had in recent times because he's had superb seasons. He polls.
He's a good chance to win three best and fairest in a row.
Yeah, exactly. And he polls. So... perhaps if he's not surrounded by so much clay, he almost needs to be playing in a slightly weaker team to win a Brownlow.
I wonder whether, in terms of the thing that really boosted Nathan over the line, I thought Michael Walters was about three votes shy of where he should have been, where I expected him to be. I expected him to poll mid-teens, and I think he was just over 10, maybe 11 votes. Brad Hill barely polled a vote. I think he was four. And David Mundy, despite a very strong first half of the season, polled five. So it was a bit like Prittis in 2014 with West Coast, where if there were votes given to a player from, West Coast in 2014, Fremantle this year, Prittis got them in 2014 and Fyfe got them this year. That's a credit to him and the dominance he exudes.
And he is under the umpire's nose, I mean, as they are so often, but... I just think the way he does it, he's such a monster, you know, and he just the way he moves through stoppages, I just think he's very prominent. And I think when umpires are looking at the end of the game and they're looking at Mundy's a terrific player, Walter's a terrific player, but I think they look at him, his body of work over the four quarters, and it's just, he just polls. He just does. So I think that's why he gets those threes instead of the twos.
So one spin-off to come out of the count, obviously, with Tim Kelly's strong showing. Chris Scott was on AFL 360 last night on the Fox network, basically said he does not see a way that the trade for Tim Kelly can be done. He said they'll be fighting to keep him.
Yep.
And clearly when he says he does not see how the trade can be done, he's talking about Tim Kelly being traded to West Coast.
Yes, that's right, because I can. There's definitely a way it can be done to Fremantle.
Fremantle, yeah.
Look, that's what I've heard, certainly from those in the know, in terms of how does West Coast get the deal done? They're scratching their heads. Now, knowing West Coast, if there's a way to get it done, they'll get it done. So who does that involve? That's going to be the intriguing thing. Does it involve, and I'll throw a name out there, and it's purely speculative, Duff, but is Gaff tradable, given he's a Victorian, given he's not, he's still got plenty of footy left in him, and given Geelong is in the premiership window?
He can't go to Geelong. So Geelong has no salary cap room for Andrew Gaff. So Geelong is not even looking.
Because, of course, Kelly's not necessarily a salary cap. He's not going to alleviate that stress too much, is he, at this stage?
That's right. So Tim Kelly hasn't been one of their top-end paid players. He would become one of their top-end paid players if he stays.
That's unless Geelong can clear some room.
Yeah, well, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think when all the rhetoric and bluster is put aside here, I think Geelong has been more than aware for some time that Tim Kelly was going to request a trade back to Perth and probably to West Coast. I think that will become formal within the next week or so at some point in time. So Geelong would have done their salary cap planning around all of this. I think they want young players or draft picks. So it's just going to be interesting to see what West Coast can come up with.
How much weight does him saying, "I choose West Coast," really have? I mean, if he's returning to his home state and to his hometown, how much weight does that really have? Surely the ball is in Geelong's court here. Or the ball is in the court of the team who's willing to give enough. Why should that have so much weight?
Well, look, at the end of the day, the decision comes down to Tim Kelly. Let's say that Geelong and West Coast cannot come to terms, but Geelong and Fremantle
can. Well, he stays at Geelong. He's not coming home then. I thought the ulterior motive was to come home.
Well, he may go to Fremantle, but it will be his decision.
Okay.
If West Coast can only come up with $550,000 a year and Geelong can come up with $800,000 a year, and Tim Kelly looks at it and goes, well, you know, I was robbed of 4 years of my career because no one drafted me. I've got a shortened time span. I need to make the most and maximise my earning capacity while I'm here. He may decide to stay at Geelong, even if it comes down to a choice between Geelong and West Coast can get the trade deal done. But I think what will happen is that West Coast will come up with a financial package that will be competitive with Geelong, and I think West Coast will find a way to get the deal done. Now,
Freo will also come up with a package that's incomparable.
Do they? But if you're Fremantle, and let's say Brad Hill goes, right, and Brad Hill has 2 years of a contract to run, therefore Fremantle has great leverage in that trade deal, and they can look at, they can just say to St Kilda, well, unless we're getting that first pick, don't even come to
us. Well, that's right. Well, why would they? He's got 2 years. So,
and then what happens if there's talk that it may be possible to split top 10 picks into two first round picks, sort of further down the pecking order? So let's say Fremantle can do that. Let's say that with Ed Langdon, if he goes to Melbourne, instead of insisting on pick 20, Fremantle might say to Melbourne, well, give us pick 38, but our first pick is pick 6 or pick 7. We want your first pick, which is pick 2 or pick 3. So give us pick 38 and flip 7 and 3. So Fremantle ends up with that pick in the draft, and then they either take that pick if they think there's an absolute gun there to be had, or they split that into two and they end up with 4 first-round draft picks in the draft this year. Now, that would be your rebuild complete.
See, I think, for me, Freo need a win and they need Tim Kelly. I just think he would complement them.
I disagree entirely. Yeah. I think that the AFL system every now and again provides you with opportunity. And this is Fremantle's opportunity. If Fremantle could harvest 4 first-round draft picks this year, and don't forget they also have Liam Henry. So that's their NGA, Next Generation Academy player. Depending on when the bid comes from Liam Henry, Fremantle has pick 24. It may be that they can use pick 24 to get Liam Henry, depending on available points, et cetera, et cetera. They could end up with five gun players out of this year's draft. That's how you build premiership teams.
Yeah, but I think you can build a premiership team around Tim Kelly too, though. This is a bloke who last weekend had 31 and 3 goals in a preliminary final.
In Geelong's system.
Yeah.
With Selwood and Dangerfield in the midfield around him. If he goes to Fremantle, he does have Nathan Fyfe. But Fremantle would prefer to play Michael Walters forward more, I reckon, rather than in the midfield as much as they did. David Mundy's 34, rising 35 next year. You know, basically, Tim Kelly goes from probably third banana at Geelong to second banana at Fremantle. He gets more attention. He gets tagged more often. We saw him get tagged a few times in the back half of the year. Didn't cope overly well with it. Tim Kelly's a superb player, don't get me wrong. But if Fremantle can back their recruiters and harvest four first-round draft picks, to me, that is the rebuild topped off.
Yep.
And I think if I was them, I would absolutely be taking that option and going down that road, particularly when it appears Tim Kelly would only go there reluctantly, if at all.
Yeah. I'm sure how reluctant he'd be.
Let's talk about the Waffle Grand Final that wasn't.
Best way to explain it, Duff, I'm at the Waffle Grand Final. We're midway through the second quarter and my youngest boy turns to me and says, "Dad, I'm bored. I want to go home." Now, that's not a selfish trait at all. He's a good kid and he loves his sport. But to me, that's a real concern. Successive Grand Final pantsings. Something has to be done. That was an embarrassing spectacle at the weekend. Embarrassing. And 18,000 thinned out pretty quickly.
And the WA Footy Commission just has to get real about this. Let's not have nonsense about, oh, how do we know Subiaco's in breach of anything? How do we know blah, blah, blah? Subiaco, forget whether they're in breach of anything or not. Subiaco had three AFL players from other club zones in their back six. So that's half your back line. They had five AFL players from other club zones in their team. They had 12 players from their zone and 10 players from out of their zone in the 22 that took the field. This is not how waffle clubs are supposed to structure.
So I don't think Subi's the only team that could be accused of breaching the salary cap untowards either. But I think, for me, it's simply a case of there's got to be caps on AFL players, regardless of, just got to be a cap. Regardless of if you've played one AFL game or 300,
yeah,
you choose your two and that's it. And I think there's got to be a more equal distribution around the competition. There are other ways to do it as well. Is the point system working? No, clearly not. I mean, you have there's clearly a gulf. So I'll ask you a question, Duff.
Yep.
This is a really interesting question. Could they beat, or if not, how close would Subi go to Gold Coast towards the end of the AFL season?
Nowhere near it.
Yeah, I was having this argument with someone. I said it would be a 15-goal loss to Subi, but they questioned that. They said they'd get within six.
Nowhere near it. Like,
I don't think so.
Cole Horsley is an ornament to the waffle and probably the greatest player to run around in the waffle, you know, in the last 10 years. Fantastic player. Cole Horsley couldn't quite cut it at the Gold Coast. And that tells you of the discrepancy in the level, you know. How are they going to cope with Jared Harbrow's run-off halfback? Jack Martin, who had a dreadful finish to the year, but imagine him on a waffle opponent. Who were they going to, you know, their fullback, as good as Jordan Lockyer is, he's playing on 2 metre Peter. And et cetera, et cetera. Who's going to ruck against Jared Witts? I mean, Lachlan Delahunty was one of their great strengths. He's a 194-centimetre ruckman. He's going to be rucking against 206-centimetre Jared Witts. Who's going to play on David Swallow? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No, they don't beat Gold Coast. They don't get close to Gold Coast. They get absolutely horsewhipped by Gold Coast. If they play 10 times, maybe Subi wins one.
Let's hope they can address it. Now, We've got a significant game coming up on Saturday, Duff. I think it's called the Grand Final.
Ah, I'd nearly forgotten about
that. Who is your most impressive of the preliminary final winners? I've got a feeling you're going to be, you'll be on a similar page to me here.
Well, look, the thing I'll say about Richmond is that I think Richmond have been incredibly powerful in their third quarters in both of their finals. So in the qualifying final against Brisbane, I was unbelievably impressed with the way they swept the Lions aside in the third quarter. Mm. And certainly again against Geelong on Friday night, challenged early, 21 points down, and then they just engaged.
They just get on the move, don't they?
And
just get on the move.
They were fantastic. But that said, anyone who underestimates GWS this Saturday, think again. They are young, but not as young as you think. They are brash. They are certainly tougher than you think. And they will go into this game with a full head of steam up. I think they'll have two sets of fresh legs. I think Lachie Whitfield will play and Toby Green will absolutely play. That will be important to them because, you know, Whitfield in particular is an elite runner. That'll give them some zip and some run around the ground. And I think the other thing, Quarters, is that their defence...
Oh, it's magnificent defence.
...threw the roof good in their last two finals. And if we believe that great defence wins grand finals, then GWS... They've got enough swagger. I don't see GWS being one of those rabbit in the headlights final teams.
Well, I hope they're not, Duff, because I think if it's on their terms, this is game on. But they need to get the game on their terms. If we allow this frenetic style that Richmond, we know Richmond loves, they're not going to like that too much. I think if they get it into a stoppage game, you know, they almost went contested possession to uncontested possession last weekend, and we know there's more contested possession in finals, but they almost got it on a par. Mm. They love being in the trenches, GWS. Now, Richmond's not going to shy away, not a particularly contested possession side, but they're not going to shy away from the trenches, but GWS love it. That's where they live. So they're going to try and get the game on those terms. If they do, it's game on.
And Quarters, I'm going to do a public mea culpa here.
Yep.
Leon Cameron.
Oh, so I'll join you.
I apologise. Like, I thought that if GWS had a meek ending and exit to this finals campaign, I thought Leon was under the pump.
So did I. I think I probably called for it mid-season. But
I take my hat off to him.
Been the coach of the finals.
I think he's been amazing. They now have a brand, and it's a really impressive brand.
It's a brand you don't want to play against.
It's a different brand.
Yeah.
It's more back half than forward half.
Yeah.
But because of their enormous running power, and another one that I reckon that we should stop saying he's underrated because he's just so good, he can't possibly be underrated, Nick Haynes.
Now, has he got – what was his larynx injury?
Fractured larynx.
He had a fractured larynx.
Yeah.
Played the following Saturday.
No.
Played the following week. Oh, but missed 1 week.
Yeah, missed one
missed
week.
Missed 1 week with the fractured larynx.
Yeah.
And has come back into that side and has been in their best three every week.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
And probably won them the game with Phil Davis against Brisbane.
Yep.
And was as influential as any player out there.
And Phil Davis, who looked like he was not going to be able to play in the grand final, certainly during the prelim, gets down to the forward line to keep the rotations going, finds his way down the back line at some stage again. And you see him walking around in last night's Brownlow medal count saying, no, I'm playing. And you know he will. He'll play. Remarkably durable person, integral to that back line, great leader. I think you're right. I think Green and Whitfield come in. I believe Coniglio's a 50-50, more like a 45-55,
more like 37.
It's around 17 since he's played. I mean, if he's able, I'd play him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's not like an ACL he's coming off.
If he's fit, Stephen Coniglio plays. He's too good a player not to play.
And, of course, the real tragedy of this one, well, let's not call it a tragedy, but for me, it could have been a fairy tale, is that Deledio won't find his way back in. His body won't allow him. Imagine him playing against Richmond on grand final day and lifting the cup.
Yeah, and, of course, the flip side of him, imagine him having to sit and watch his old team.
Which I think you wrote about, didn't you? It's like a double...
play his new team. That's like two hammer blows to the heart, really.
It is. Definitely is. So I feel for him this weekend. I really do. I think he's been a great servant of the game. Wonderful person, great footballer, and I would have liked to have seen him out there.
Quarters, one more before we go. Marlon Pickett. Best on ground, Norm Goss medalist on the weekend.
It's not the 1930s, Duff. I can't see how you can debut in an AFL grand final. I really can't.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got the talent. Oh, it's a shame. He'll stay on their list, and I hope he gets through next year. I just wouldn't roll the dice to make you debut on Grand Final day. Look, if it happens, I'll barrack for the story because it's a West Australian. It'll be a fantastic story, but I just can't see it happening.
Okay, so let's just go hypotheticals because there are a lot of what-ifs between now and when the teams are named on Thursday, and there are more what-ifs between when the teams are named on Thursday and running out on Saturday.
Yep.
If there's 22 in the team at the moment, let's say we're thinking Jack Graham doesn't get up off a
I'm not sure about that. Yeah,
I'm thinking he doesn't. I'm thinking...
I wonder if Hardwick will do a Francis Burke Mickey Mulderhouse.
Yeah.
So in 1982, Mick Mulderhouse did his shoulder in the second semi or the prelim.
It was one of the finals.
Yeah, one of the finals, and he'd done everything he could to get himself up, and it was sore, but he thought, look, I can nurse through myself through a grand final, having played in the 1980 premiership. Anyway, they almost got through the final training session on the Thursday night, and Francis Burke calls Mick over and absolutely poleaxes him through the shoulder and puts it out.
Yep.
And he said, well, they would have done that in the first quarter on Saturday.
Yep.
And I know Mick sort of now looks back on that and sees the reasoning for it, but at the time he couldn't, that's for sure. Let's hope Hardwick doesn't do that this week, but given his, it popped out four times in the
prelim. I don't think Jack Graham can play.
Yeah.
So I think at the moment, under your reckoning, I would say that Jack Ross is the one in the chair.
Yep.
So
McIntosh is available too.
Who's the 23rd? Is it Pickett or is it McIntosh?
Is Sydney Stack fit?
Sydney Stack can't possibly play.
Why?
Had six disposals last week, limped off a couple of times mid-match.
Shame because if he'd got through four quarters, I would have played him because I think he's got a bit of X factor and he loves a big stage. I'm going McIntosh with my 23rd.
I reckon McIntosh is there for coverage in case Broad doesn't get up for concussion.
And has the experience.
I reckon if another midfielder goes down, I agree with you, I think Ross will play ahead of Pickett. Another midfielder goes down.
You reckon he's a
chance? I reckon Pickett plays.
Wow.
Yep.
That is some sort of story. Of course, we've got some GWS players coming back too. Bobby Hill probably going to be a bit unlucky, or do you think they...
Well, not really unlucky. Yeah. He was bought in... You know, he had a nervous game. He seven disposals.
That's a good way of describing it. It was a nervous game. You can see the potential. He's going to be a real talent, but he just didn't use the ball well.
You know who the hard luck story could be? Lockie Keefe.
Yeah,
did such an amazing job on Brody Mychek.
Returning last week, did an amazing job on Mychek. Yeah, you're right. Well, there's going to be hard luck stories.
So I think he's the one that might miss out. Thank you for joining us today. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch. We will be back on Thursday to go through the whys, wherefores and how of who will win the 2019 Grand Final. It's been great talking to you and we will talk to you once or twice again before the end of our run on this podcast for 2019.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch.